Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Uncanny Treks covers Star Trek Lower Decks. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing great, Bob. The title of this week's episode was Upper Decks, and man, this is a strong episode.
Yeah, you like this one a lot. I liked it too. I think you liked it maybe a bit more than me. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite episodes of the series. I just thought it was really cool the way they set it up. I can watch an Upper Decks show. Just go ahead, just that be this.
Matt's like, I'm tired of Lower Decks. We need some Upper Decks action.
Do Middle Decks.
It would be appropriate, given that Lower Decks famously is the title of an episode, I believe late in the last season of The Next Gen, where you focus on the Lower Deckers. And it would be appropriate if then Lower Decks spun off an Upper Decks, which it aired late in its last season.
Exactly. See, this is what we need. I don't want this fun animation to go away.
I was saying earlier that I was a little more comforted by the loss of Lower Decks because I felt, while the earlier parts of the season were not bad by any means, I felt they were a little repetitive and a little stale, and there wasn't a whole lot of gas left in the tank. And the last couple of episodes have been very strong, and it is making me a little more wistful and a little more sad about the coming end of Lower Decks.
Right. They were intentional with their episode place, for sure.
So this week, we're talking about episode 8 of season 5, the last season of Lower Decks, Upper Decks. And then we're also talking about episode 8 of season 1, the first season of Lower Decks, Veritas, which originally aired on the 24th of September, 2020. But we'll do Upper Decks first. I will begin, Matt, by saying that Rutherford's beard is gone, and that's really sad. But I do admire his carving of a V'ger into a jack-o'-lantern. That's very cool.
So when I saw the jack-o'-lanterns, Bob, a little concerned it was going to be a Halloween-themed episode. I didn't really want that in December. I worried for a tiny moment that it was only this part of the show, so I'm good for it.
You didn't want a tribute to the great original series episode Cat's Paw, which is the original series, a Halloween episode in season 2.
Not what I wanted. I don't like for my Star Trek shows to have Simpsons vibes, like Treehouse of Horror, you know what I mean?
That makes sense. And especially given how close this is to The Simpsons in some respects already, right? You maybe don't want to go there.
Exactly.
So we meet what I thought was a new character in this episode, Steve Stevens. But apparently he's been in 12 episodes of the show. I just don't remember him, which I think is part of the point of the design.
He's like quartermaster, the second officer or something like that. Like,
well, my first thought was he was the yeoman, right? Like you think back to Yeoman Rand in the original series. But he's a lieutenant commander, which is, you would usually assume a yeoman would be a non-commissioned rank, but he's a lieutenant commander, which seems high. And apparently, according to Memory Alpha, he's a command division officer, whatever that is. But really, his main job just seems to be the captain's aide-de-camp.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like my job.
Walk around and keep him on schedule, Matt. Lieutenant commander seemed very high for a rank for somebody who seems to be like a glorified schedule maker.
Yeah, Steve Stevens, too, that name. They gave him that name just because they knew it would just be so dull. Wow.
Yeah. Very. It's clever in its badness.
He's got that same Powell horseshoe baldness going.
Well, Matt, to go from the Cerritos' least memorable officer to its most memorable officer, did you think Shax had turned into a werewolf for a moment in this episode?
I did, and I remember seeing this in the trailer and thinking it was supposed to be Mirror Shax or something like that. I think we both talked a little bit about that, and it wasn't, though. It turns out he's just fighting demons on the inside with PTSD.
Yeah, it's nice to see Shax overcoming his internal demons. Good message at the end, too, from Counselor Migley Moo about thinking of therapy as a weapon. I do want to make one plug and make one gross comment. So, listeners, if you haven't, you can check out our coverage of Creature Commandos, the first two episodes, which just started on Max. You can see our thoughts on that, which are scattered and hostile, I think would be fair to say. But between all of the sex in the first two episodes of Creature Commandos and then between Dr. Teyana's pain kink in this episode of Lower Decks, Matt, I think I'm just done with sex. I don't think I'm ever going to have sex again. Animated sex is so gross.
Yes, it's just a weird thing going on here, Bob. I just don't understand why we're seeing so much of it now.
God, when they said adult animation, I didn't think they meant like adult film. Oh my God. Again, I want to be clear. I'm not sex negative in media. I'm just sex negative in animation.
Well, in animation, that what you're trying to make appealing.
And in both Creature Commandos and Lower Decks, characters are drawn in very unattractive ways. It's part of the point of the animation style. Oh, man. This is like a small detail from the episode, but Matt, do you remember what the Oberth class starships look like?
Yeah. Aren't those the ones that have the circular piece in the center, and they have, it's like a pointed, it's almost like a needle point at the bottom with two.
The nacelles are what would be the saucer section. It's more rectangular, but like you say, with a saucer laid on top of the square. And then the nacelles are on either side of it. And then the nacelles have struts that connect it to a hull that looks like a needle point.
Yeah.
They're usually science vessels. They debuted in Star Trek III, if you remember Search for Spock. And I didn't remember this, but apparently Dr. Teyana is known for hating Oberth science vessels. But they mention an Oberth science vessel named the Manticore, which is a monster. I just like the seriousness and the dread of the name Manticore for what's, you know, this cute little science vessel. It makes me laugh.
Say cute. I thought those were ugly as sin, Bob. They're ugly.
No, they're so ugly they come back around.
They look ugly. It's like it's like an observation deck on top of a missile.
One of my favorite ship's designs.
I mean, that actually describes just about every single Star Trek ship. I apologize. That's an observation deck on top of a missile.
Look, Matt. Look, just listen. It's better than the Galaxy class. You know it is.
Yeah, okay, I can do that. I never liked the size of the saucer on the Galaxy. It's too. I like more of a sleeker design.
Yeah. Sleek is the way. Excelsior, Sovereign, Constitution, they show you the way.
So, Bob, let me tell you why I really like this episode, in that I learned so much about the Upper Deck characters in one episode than I do, like, throughout the entire series, which just is a testament to their writing. And then I actually do care somewhat about these characters enough that I want to see more. So I'm supposed to understand, let's just go through them real quick, that Billups take shortcuts, right?
This is the one I want to challenge you on a little bit. I mean, not that you're wrong. I might not just have been paying attention in the Billups scenes, but can you explain that a little more?
They kept pulling apart panels, and he had fixed things, that he'd fixed them his way.
Okay.
They kept causing issues. And like at one point he had programmed a golem.
Yeah.
Instead. Is part of the access to something that he needed to get to.
Okay. I wasn't paying enough attention. Well, I saw the AI golem, but I didn't catch that it was a Billups creation. Although
it's more of saying that he's making things more difficult for himself. I guess that's
interesting. So, well, it also kind of makes him parallel with Rutherford creating Badgie in a funny way.
Exactly. See, Bob, and the fact that we're talking about Billups right now, that's what I'm saying. That's why I like this.
All right. Sorry, I interrupted your list. So we got Billups.
Come on. Billups, we've dedicated over like 5 minutes to this character that no one gave to. He had a episode with the Renaissance Festival stuff.
You didn't like the origin, his Renaissance Fair Planet origin?
All right. So I'm supposed to understand also, okay, with Freeman, she's got a very rigid schedule, a very unimportant thing she has to do throughout the day. However, those things are important in the grand scheme of things.
Well, and to add on to this one, and I'll probably just let you do the other ones, but to add on to this one, this is what was this and the speech at the end of the episode really gave me Janeway vibes. And it's not just that they're the only two female captains, but I've been rewatching season one of Voyager just to have something to watch. And it is, I think, more than Picard or Sisko or Archer. You see Janeway take a lot of time to go around, talk to individual crew members, suss out what their thing is. And it's framed there as like she wouldn't normally do that, but because they're in the Delta Quadrant, she feels like she has to up her involvement. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, that does make sense.
It is interesting that both of our female captains get this more nurturing, attend on their crew members vibe, right?
Right. I really like that subplot with Freeman. In the end, we get the Klickets, Bob. I just want to point this out. And we had the Klickets in this episode, but we also have the Klickets in the episode Recovery in season one. Goes all the way back to that episode, Bob.
Yeah, such symmetry, Matt. Such symmetry.
They did that on purpose. Season 8, that season 1, episode 8, last season, episode 8.
The chief.
Getting to Teyana, Bob. Teyana would rather feel intense pain than make a simple change to a chart. Have you ever met a person at work like that?
Yeah, I'm sort of like that.
Yeah, it's annoying, but it's okay. You do you. Ransom's pretty useless, right?
Yeah, although he at least... Front says he pretends to be useless to motivate the Lower Decks, but maybe that's how he justifies his uselessness to himself. I mean, the psychological complexities abound.
That was crazy. And then, you know, we also found out that Shax is constantly battling the ghost of his past, which we didn't really know anything about. Learned a lot about that one character. I mean, we knew he fought Cardassians. We knew this, but not to this extent.
Shax is great, man. Shax is great.
So, Bob, they need to just make this show. Make this a show.
Even if they had just done the two more seasons to make the joke, of the show going seven seasons, yeah. Which seems, oh God, that makes me a little sad and angry. It doesn't get that joke. But go seven seasons and just have more focus on both the upper decks and the lower decks. Although they definitely had been upping the focus on the upper decks in later seasons. That's already happened to some extent. Matt, I did want to give you my favorite Clickett line, which was, we want to harvest their cloaking organs and maybe eat what's left depending on the texture and flavor. And then there was a great exchange where the Clickett shoots a energy weapon at Dr. T and says, that was set to kill. To which Dr. T had a reply, it's just, so am I.
Bob, I'm going to give you a Babylon 5 question for you here. Just real quick, I'll throw at you, but it fits in with this. So the shadows had cloaking technology, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I honestly don't remember.
I'm just going to say it was biological, right?
Yeah. I like that. I don't know that there's anything in the show that would confirm that, but sure, why not?
Okay.
I like it.
I'm just thinking like...
Okay. Oh, or no, you're thinking of the Vorlons, aren't you?
Vorlons, excuse me. The shadows cloak themselves.
Well, probably shadow technology is probably similar to Vorlon technology, but it's... I think we explicitly know that Vorlon ships are organic, and then I don't... This is outing me as a bad Babylon 5 fan, but I don't remember if the shadow ships are organic or not.
Okay. Well, I'm just thinking, if it's organic, do you think that they would, as a species, we would then try to harvest those creatures to get their technology?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, we're terrible.
Yeah, okay. I just want to confirm that.
Look what we did to whales, and probably we'll keep doing to whales. Of course we will. We're terrible.
I feel for the shadows, though.
I did want to say at the end that Dr. Tiana's gay nurse petting her, that really made me laugh.
Yeah, this character and his everything this character does. Have I seen him before?
That's a good question.
I don't think I have. Him and the one who played the trombone, I don't feel like I've ever seen.
I definitely feel the cave woman trombonist is a new thing.
Tuba, my bad, guys. Tuba.
Or no, it was a sousaphone. Although, is a sousaphone a tuba?
But I don't know. It's a big brass instrument she's playing.
His name is... Nurse Westlake, I believe. He's been in 12 episodes, although he was a non-speaking background character until the Voyager episode last season, Tuvix.
Wow. We've got two characters we have seen so many times, I didn't even realize they were running characters.
Yeah. That also makes me wonder if Steve Stevens was non-speaking, although I'm not gonna look it up. Well, Matt, the last character beat I wanted to highlight from this episode is at the end, Talyn has the line, I have made a joke at your expense.
But where's she been all the series? Why didn't we have her all series? We could have more of this.
Or when they had her join the crew at the end of season two, we could have had her at least fully in season three and four.
What is wrong? Why not? That's your missed opportunity, Lower Decks. The one missed opportunity. I mean,
it really would have helped the show a little, because as much as I like this show, there are times when it feels like it's in a little bit of a rut of always having to do the same type of stories with the Fantastic Four. And so adding Talyn to the Fantastic and making it the Fantastic Five would give you more variation.
Well, Bob, we saw character of the episode, and I think we're in agreement on who the character of the episode is.
Yeah, it's got to be, for me, it's the line as he yells about his guilty conscience about killing all these Cardassians. They weren't warriors. They were occupiers.
Bob, my favorite scene, though, with Shax is after, when he finally comes out of his trance and realizes he beat up all his Clickets, then he apologizes to them. This is thought of an accident.
Yeah, he's working on himself. He's working on himself. Well, to go to episode 8 of season 1, Veritas, I just wanted to say, I don't know if you remember this at all, but it's really nice to have a retrospective courtroom episode in Lower Decks, very much in the traditional of the original series episode Court Martial. And then also there's a Next Generation episode, Matter of Perspective, which I don't think I saw till I was an adult, but I vividly remember you telling me the plot of Matter of Perspective because you'd seen it and I hadn't.
I have no clue what this one's about.
It's one where they go on a space station and I think it blows up and they blame Riker and then they have to reconstruct it on the holodeck. It's a late season 3 episode.
And I'm going to go back and rewatch this and report back to you, bub.
It's hilarious. You don't remember it at all, but it's like one of my most vivid memories about watching Star Trek as a kid. It's not even watching. It's just having you describe it to me.
That's hilarious. I don't know. All I remember is you as a kid, is you had that magazine that had like descriptions of all the episodes. I just remember reading like every single synopsis.
Yep. Same, man. Same. I think it was the 25th anniversary,
yeah,
or maybe 35th.
God.
Or no, it would have been 30th. It would have been 66 to 96. Yeah.
That's what's so crazy though, because back then, I mean, we didn't have money to buy the, like, we had some tapes, but that was the only way to get them.
VHS.
I think all I had was a box set of the pilot episodes.
Yeah.
Of DS9, the next gen, and the two pilots of the original series. So that was 4 episodes. And then, although they were, a lot of them were two-parters. And then I had a VHS of The Man Trap, which is the salt vampire that they also reference in this episode.
Exactly. It's just crazy. I think I had Trouble with Tribbles. I think is all I had, maybe.
Yeah, I remember watching Trouble with Tribbles.
I had a bootleg copy of Generations I got my neighbor to download for on HBO.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. And by download, you mean record?
Well, my God, yeah. We're old, man. This is off track, and this is going to be a little off track, but it's fine. I'm rereading some Batman comics from the 90s that we grew up with. And
yeah.
To hear Tim Drake use the language of that time to talk about computers is awful. One of the lines I read in Prodigal is, "I'm going to modem over the file to you."
That's amazing. That's amazing.
I'll modem it to you.
Oh, it's so good. It makes me so happy.
Crazy how far the technology is. People don't understand like how it was so different.
Can I make a slight counterpoint? You're right that communications technology has advanced crazily over the course of our lives, because we're some of like the last people who remember a pre-internet world.
Right.
Not that we're the last people still alive, but just chronologically, we're some of the last, right?
Right.
You're right in that way, the world has utterly changed. But I was reading a novel from 1985 to talk about with a friend. It's called White Noise by Don DeLillo. It's a very famous postmodern novel. I've meant to read it for 20 years and never have. Finally read it. It's really great. And it is an absolutely brutal satire of American academic culture in the 80s and also American supermarkets in the 80s. It's brutal. And nothing has changed, Matt.
In the grand scheme of things, it's still the same. You're just getting it faster.
I do think, though, like if you'd written that novel 40 years before, supermarkets in the universities in 45 would look nothing like they do in 85. But in 85 to 2024, they look almost exactly the same. In some ways, yeah, the communications technology has changed everything. But in other ways, we're actually had been in a real moment of stagnation in the last 40 years, if that makes sense.
Yeah, to some degree, yes. I understand what you're saying. We still have the same problems, essentially. They're just bored.
Sort of. Oh, the other thing about that book, it got a lot of burst recently. Do you remember when the train derailed and leaked the toxic gas in Ohio? East Palestine is the name of the place. One of the main things in that novel, too, is there's an airborne toxic event. I was already going to read it before that, but that motivated a lot of people to revisit it. And it's actually, sorry that I'm off the tangent, but one of the best page turns in literature I've ever experienced. So I knew about the airborne toxic event in White Noise, but I thought it was the climax of the novel.
Oh.
And I was still in the first part, and I'm reading it, and the way my edition lays the page, the end of this chapter is pretty near down to the bottom of the page.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't even register. I was going pretty quick. I didn't even register that I was coming up on the end of the chapter because it was so low down. And the end of this chapter is the family of the main character is watching their mother on local access television. They're at home watching her on the TV in the living room, and they're having a religious experience, because it's also a kind of satire of TV culture. And they're having this almost religious experience of seeing their mother on the local access TV. I got to the end of the page. I turn it, new page, part 2, airborne toxic event. I didn't expect that to happen at that moment. And just a hard transition. It's one of the one of the best page turns on a book I've ever experienced.
I'm looking at the synopsis of this. I'm going to have to get a read, Bob.
It might be a fun audiobook.
That might be. I could do that.
DeLillo's got a very quippy style.
Well, Bob, back to what we came here to discuss, Lower Decks.
We're talking about Veritas. We're talking about it's a retrospective court episode. We start out with the Fantastic Four arguing about who's the best Star Trek supervillain. And Boimler's going with the choice of Roga Danar, who I did not remember at all. I think he's a super soldier in the episode of Next Gen in season 2 or 3 that's an allegory about the IRA that the BBC wouldn't air until a couple of years ago.
It's called The Hunted. I don't remember much about it. And I was going to actually give it a watch, but then I didn't get into it.
It's also the source of the meme about the Irish Unification Act of 2024, which, we almost got it. Star Trek almost predicted a unification of Ireland in 2024. Wow. I really did like Boimler's response when Mariner tells him to fake it, and Boimler's just like, what's it?
That's the real problem with all this. I don't know what the it is.
Well, and the fact that you have to ask that shows that you don't understand the concept, right? Okay. That not knowing what it is part of faking. Crazy and funny how incompetent both Mariner and Boimler are on the bridge.
They're given those opportunities, but I'll just grab the brass ring. They don't.
And they just don't do it.
They don't do it. That's right there. They gave him a shot.
As an English teacher, this makes me relatively unique, but I usually don't love wordplay.
Yeah.
But the word unyield, that actually does make me laugh. That's a good word.
It's a very good word. I don't like the new word people are using for dead.
Unalived.
Is that a thing that you're hearing a lot more?
Yeah, you know why people are doing that, right?
No, Bob, please tell me why, and hope it's not
to get around the automatic algorithms that give you strikes on Twitch and YouTube. If you tell somebody to kill yourself, you'll get a strike. But if you say unalive yourself,
oh, how awful. Okay, I thought it was the thing people just don't want to say dead because it hurts. It hurts them, makes them sad.
There's probably some of that too. There's probably some of that too.
But yeah,
what
you're saying makes way more sense. Okay, that explains a lot. You got to be able to threaten you some way where it won't pick up that I'm threatening you.
Exactly. Back when I cared about Twitter, I used to be very good at suggesting people off themselves without triggering the algorithm. I think this one guy once said something mean about my very good friend's husband. And so we both just started. I just kept sending him party pictures of us when you finally do it. Us when you get the courage to end it.
Damn, Bob.
Hey, man, if he didn't want that, he shouldn't have said that about my friend's husband.
There you go. There you go.
What other question about death euphemisms? Do you have any feelings on the word?
Not really, no.
I feel I've been hearing that a lot more recently, and I think it's not a real word. I think it's made up cop speak. You know how cops like their jargon and their police reports. But I got into an argument with a friend who's a lawyer who likes that word and finds it very useful. And I was just like, but man, you can say deceased in every context where you could say decedent. Like what's its add value?
Yeah, I've never heard that, Bob. It hasn't made its way down here to the Southland. When it gets down here in a couple of years, I'll let you know.
Another exchange I really liked in this episode is Rutherford coming at him as one of his update blackouts. It's like, I don't know how to be nervous. And Shax pointing to 2 down Vulcans is like, tell that to Spock and Spock. Matt, do you think aliens call humans Kirks?
I mean, they could. Well, like Karens, I guess.
Oh, I didn't even think about that potential. That's good. For nostalgia reasons, it was great to see a Vulcan shuttle and a space dock in this episode.
Yeah, that little trinket of knowledge about what a Vulcan shuttle looks like is always going to be just stuck in my head.
Do you remember my little micro machine of it?
Sure do, Bob. That's the only reason I remember what that thing looks like.
And then I have to say that the Gorn wedding is my favorite use of the Gorn before Strange New Worlds. It's so funny.
Yeah, I remember when this episode first aired, that you texted me whenever you watched it at 2 a.m. in the morning.
All you wrote was Gorn wedding! Exclamation mark. Just the image of Rutherford being gnawed on by a bunch of Gorns as he walks on the floor. Yeah. It's very funny.
it is funny, yes.
Matt, you know the meme, the meme theory that Picard is always speaking French and the universal translator is rendering it as English with a British accent?
Right.
So if Picard is Q's favorite mortal, Should we assume that Q is also always speaking French?
Yes, and the computer's translating it.
I like that. And as we see Dr. T get on the alternate Cerritos, the another California class ship, and she sees Human Fly Boimler. Did you want more of Human Fly Boimler?
I just wanted to hear it talk.
Wise man.
I wanted to hear it talk for at least once, and then I could give you a better, I want to see more of it.
Well, Matt, I did want to say, I don't know if you'll agree with this, but one of the things we go to this show for is profound commentary about the nature of modern work and the nature of workforces. Mariner's great line, knowing things means more work. Oh, man, that spoke to me. That speaks to how I try not to know things.
It's very true, Bob. The more you know, the more you have to play around.
Who is your character of the episode, Matt?
I'm giving it a 10D Bob for this one because we get to see her go on the secret mission. It was a short little story, but it was cute, you know?
Yeah. 10D was great in her segment. That was good. I'm going to have to give it to Rutherford, though. I really felt his pain about updates. My laptop was dealing with an update from Tuesday to Friday. It was insane.
Yeah,
I restarted the computer because I was hoping that would expedite it, and it just restarted the whole thing, and then it failed. It's all better now. This has been Uncanny Treks cover Star Trek Lower Decks. We only got two more Lower Decks episodes to go, Matt. Are you sad?
I'm extremely sad, Bob. I need more Lower Decks. But the only thing that means, though, Bob, Lower Decks is leaving, but having Strange New Worlds is right around the corner somewhere.
Hopefully. I would expect more in late spring or early summer, I would expect. But maybe I'm wrong.
One step closer, Bob.
One step closer. That's true. Yeah, and the last Star Trek standing, really.
At least, really is. We're going to get 8 seasons.
Oh, God, yeah. Let it go to eternity. Let it go to eternity. All right, well, this has been Uncanny Treks covers Star Trek Lower Decks. Join us for our last two episodes. Join us for our big retrospective on Season 5 and the whole show. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everyone.
Thanks for listening.